you, Adam. Good morning, RGF. It's good to be back home. It's been a few weeks. Thank you, Amanda. All right. And I've missed you guys, believe it or not. I believe it. I believe it wholeheartedly. And we were away in Texas for a week, just myself, not with the family. And the trip back was actually quite complicated. It made me have some mixed thoughts in my mind. I left Houston, Texas. I left the hotel at 4 a.m. So I had a very early flight. I had people that I needed to see in Maryland, so I asked Cindy to pick me up from the airport. And as Cindy was coming to the airport around noon already, she has a blowout on her tire. So that got complicated. I had somebody else pick me up, went and met her at the rest area, got the van back up, got to barely see the people I needed to see, and then we started heading down here from the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area down here. And I have had bad commutes and bad trips, but this was something special altogether. Coming down 95 was shut down. I don't know why, but we had a detour through Route 1. 45 minutes late, an hour late, I get to 295. Seems like a fatal accident, so again we detour. Get off again. Now it's about 10, 11 o'clock at night. I get off of 295 on 64, and you know they've been doing construction on 64 north of Williamsburg for the past, I don't know, I've been here only for a year, and it's been like that, so it's been at least a year, maybe much, much longer. They shut it down, so we went to Yosemite Park, and I don't know what else, another 2-3 hours. And then I have this friend called Waze. She's usually very good, and she tells me where to go. And Waze tells me to go to the, you have the Herbert Tunnel and the Merbert Tunnel, MBBRT, I don't know, and the HBRT. It tells me to go to the 664 side. And usually Waze is very good, but this time Waze messed up big time. Because we get to the 664 tunnel, and I'm like, I don't know, a quarter of a mile into a tunnel, and both of the lights go red and they shut down the tunnel. It's midnight. I got to see the coal piles like never before. I got off the van. I walked around. I got to see the tunnel up close for the first time. They open up the tunnel like 45 minutes later. I kid you not. 1 o'clock in the morning, we get to the high-rise bridge. Open and under construction. I tell you, it was 1:30 in the morning when we finally got off 168 to get home. By that time, I said, one of my church members really doesn't want me to come back and has been praying tirelessly that I don't make it home. So whoever of you it was, come talk to me. Come face to face. We'll sort it out. But stop your prayers because they're really, really effective, it seems. And when we were pulling into the driveway, into the neighborhood, I told Cindy, I'm going to look the other way because with all this bad luck, I'm sure we don't have a house when I get there. It's either going to be burned down, under 5 feet of water, a tree's going to be over it because we cannot have that much bad luck in one trip. So I went the last quarter of a mile looking the other way. Cindy guided me. I don't want to see. And then finally she said, it's there. Don't worry. And it seems to be all in one piece. But we're glad to be home. And sometimes our life journey is just like that. But we're glad to be home and we're glad to spend this time together. And I pray that today, as we spend this time together, we'll be able to live this place encouraged. Now, today I want to talk a little bit in honor of Father's Day about this thing that we called parenting, right? And it's really difficult for me to talk about this subject. Very, very hard for me. And I feel very scared to talk about this subject. First of all, because on Mother's Day, we talked about something completely different. So all the moms are already upset that I ignore them. No. So we'll try to make it a little even. But during Mother's Day, we wanted to finish a sermon series before I left to Houston. So we're going to talk a little bit to both parents today, both moms and dads. But there's another reason, honestly, now being a little more serious, but it's so hard to talk about this thing. It's because, honestly, we live in a less than perfect world. And if you are somebody's child, and yes, that's you. Definitely. If you're here, you're somebody's child. Believe me. Unless somebody told you a really interesting story, that story about the seagull that came, or how you call it, the story that came and dropped you, that's probably not true. So chances are you are somebody's child. You probably already discovered that your parents they're not perfect, right? And if you're a parent yourself, you probably came to realize very quickly early on that your kids, because they're yours, they're not perfect either. So, you know, it makes very difficult because all our life circumstances are also a big company. And some of us had great parents. Some of us had not so great parents. Some of us grew up with mom and dad. Some of us grew up with mom and who also had to be dad, or dad who also had to be mom. And some of us didn't get to experience much of that. And some of us are in less than ideal situations right now. But I pray that as we spend this time together, I don't want you to live here thinking, I really want to do better at this. If you're a child, if you're a parent specifically, this is kind of more to you. I'm sorry for the kids as well. This is the other dangerous thing about talking about these subjects, that you alienate some people. But sometimes it's good that we talk about this. But I don't want nobody leaving here thinking, I really hope I can do better at this. Rather, I hope that we'll come out of here convinced of the greatest need that we have. So, first of all, moms. First of all, because I'm going to try to be general, because I don't want to just talk to fathers and not mothers. Moms, the love that you show your kids, it is the purest form of good that they'll ever see. It is the purest and most beautiful form of good that they'll ever see. I have a friend that I met a while ago. His name is Ty Gibson. We met in Wisconsin, and he shared a little bit of his story with me. He grew up an atheist. And he was an atheist most of his life. And the only reason that convinced him that there might be a God was his mother's love. He saw something in his mother's love that he said, there has to be a source of good somewhere. And it was that love that, in contrast to all the pain and hurt that he experienced in the world, led him to believe that maybe there is something out there. So the love that you can show your kids' moms, it's the most powerful image of goodness of God that your kids will ever see. That's the words that you say. Somebody put it this way. Moms, your words weigh about 25 pounds. Dads, your words weigh about 500 pounds. How many of us spend so much of our lives seeking our dad's approvals? It's just like that. Sometimes the love of the mom, the approval of the dad are things that are so important to us. And kids, let me tell you something. As messed up as your parents are, okay, and they're pretty messed up, I believe you. When you tell me my parents are the worst, I believe you. Chances are that they are pretty messed up. Chances are, I can almost assure you, that nobody in this world loves you as much as they do. And I can assure you that any day, unless your parents are unlike anything I've seen before, even those parents are very messed up and you haven't seen in a while, they would die for you any day of the week. I can almost guarantee it. So let's get into this together and talk a little bit about this thing, co-parenting. Are you with me? And if you're a child, a parent, I hope you take something away from this. And if you're not a parent, I hope you take something away from this. And if you're done being a parent, you're never done being a parent. So I still hope you'll get something away from it. So let's pray and let's get started. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for being exactly that, our Father. And as we spend this time together, we just pray that your Holy Spirit will be here. And that we will leave this place encouraged and keenly aware of the need that we have for your love and your mercy transforming every aspect of our lives. We thank you for our dads, we thank you for our moms, we thank you for our kids, and just join us as we spend this time together. And speak to our hearts and give us the strength to be convinced that everything can be okay. That you're a good Father and you're going to make everything all right if we get just one thing right. We can mess up in everything else, but if we get this one thing right, everything else, because you're a good Father, can be okay. I thank you for this. In Jesus' precious name, amen. When Christian was growing up, well, he's still growing up, not as fast as I like to, but when he was a baby, Cindy and I were mortified, and I think I shared this story before, because for the first 30 days of his life, we didn't sleep more than an hour and a half a night, just about. We used to call them the midnight eyes. For some reason, at midnight, that boy woke up, and his lungs were fine-tuned to be at optimum performance from midnight to about 6 in the morning. And we tried everything. I took him out for drives because my parents told me that. I used to be like that, so they used to take me out on the car, and they would drive me around town. I tried driving him around town. We tried rocking him. We tried putting the fan noise, you know, that white noise. We tried everything, and nothing worked. We tried to get him, I don't know if we tried the pacifier, Cindy. I don't know. I know that we were going crazy the very first 30 days of his life, and that boy just wasn't sleeping. We used to change the diaper, get a different diaper, organic diapers, Walmart diapers, Pampers, anything to see if that boy would sleep, and he wouldn't, for no reason, sleep at night. After 30 days or so, the boy was in very dire situation in terms of his weight, and the doctor told us to supplement his food with a formula. That night we gave him formula, and that boy slept 8 hours straight. It is awful when you want to give your kids something good for them and you're just not giving them the right thing. We tried it was the diapers, we tried it was all these things, and the one thing that he needed, we completely missed. So I want us today to really hone down a little bit on what we really need. And we're going to talk a little bit about the things that make parenting so difficult and the one thing that we can do right. And here's the deal. I want to be completely honest with you. I'm going to air today, and this whole thing will be overly simple. It will be so simple. There won't be anything depth or theological. And I tried looking at Bible stories, and I found some very interesting ones about parenting. And then I said, no. Let's go for something extremely, extremely simple with the hope that it is something so simple that we can all commit to and try to really, really do and make it a reality in our lives. So today you're not going to be blown away by anything. Today it's not going to be something, but if we can commit to this together, I can guarantee you we'll be for the better. So first of all, I want to talk about three things that make parenting very difficult today, okay? Are you with me? Three things, kids, parents, that make parenting so difficult to end. And the first one is the most important one. And if you miss this one, nothing else will make sense. And I'm sure none of you have realized this, so I really need you to pay attention to this. Because if you don't get this part right, really nothing else will make sense. Because parenting is so difficult because of the single fact that parenting is hard. It just is. It's hard. Parenting is not easy. It's hard. And you probably discovered this. I remember when Cindy and I just got married. We used to go to church, and we used to see kids walking around and running around. And we used to say, oh, man, I don't know what those parents are doing. When we have kids, oh, my goodness, those kids, man, they're going to be glued to that pew. They're never going to get up. They're not going to walk around. They're not going to make a single noise in church. And then we had Christian. When Cindy and I got married, we used to go to restaurants, and we used to see those kids, you know, the fork on the ground and speaking on the table and making, and we used to say, oh my goodness, when we have kids, oh man, I don't know what these parents have no clue what they're doing. Our kids, they're never going to make a noise in a restaurant. And then we had Christian. He hasn't broken any plates yet, but believe me, he has made a lot of noise. Because we all come up thinking that kids are going to be so easy. We all, you know, think that we're going to do so good at it until it hits us that parenting is hard. It just is. And you can do much to prepare to be a good parent. You can read books, because I read books. You can learn skills. You can have methodologies. You can do all these things. But nothing will ultimately prepare you to be a good parent. Because all those skills and methodologies are helpful, and I hope you do try your best and you take high. But it doesn't recognize the fact that each and every single human being is just a little different. So if you learn one skill, it might work with one and not with the other. If you learn this one thing and this works well, then you'll figure out that it might not work with the other, because this is about people, and people are different. And you can learn skills, and I hope you do. I remember talking to Linda about personalities, understanding that how much I can help you to understand each child a little different. But there's something I remember. My sisters and I, how frustrated my dad used to get. Because my dad used to tell us to do something, right? And I see a lot of kids here. And your dad, chances are they ask you to do things. And my dad used to say, go clean your room, okay? And all of us, each one of us, reacted a little differently. So I was the silliest one of them all. I was dumb. Because I used to get mad. I don't want to do it. No, I'm not going to do it. And I used to just tell my dad no flat out. And then automatically that would go bad the wrong way. But I used to have this very bad predisposition. I used to say no. But then this is what would happen to me. I would start feeling bad about it. So I would go and do it even though I said no. My first response would always say no. And I would say go and get this from the car. And I would say no. And then 5 minutes later, because I felt bad, I was out there doing it. And I made my dad angry. I already got on his bad side. And I ended up doing the thing that I didn't want to do anyways. Now, my middle sister, Romina, and this is why my two older sisters, they're doctors and I'm a pastor, because they're smarter than me. Romina used to just pretend she didn't hear anything. So she went, and she wouldn't do it. And she went, yeah. And then Melissa, she's the youngest and she's the smartest. You know, they come refined. You know, each child comes a little better. Now, she always said yes. Yes, Daddy. Of course, Daddy. And she wouldn't do a thing. But because she said yes, Daddy, my dad used to always be happy, you know, and she used to always be. And she said, yes, Daddy, of course I'll go clean my room. 4 hours later, the room is still the same. But that's her, because each one of us was a little different. And then when my dad used to come and when we used to have a little mishap, you know, my dad would come and confront me, and I used to just stand firm and say, and what are you going to do about it? And I had this really confrontational attitude. My middle sister, she would just shut down and cross her arms and be like that. And Melissa, because she's the smartest of us three, she would just turn down and cry. And my dad wouldn't do anything to her because he felt so bad. Just by saying something, calling her attention, it would completely change her. So each one of us is a little different. And through all these differences, it makes it tough to know, you know, how we cope best with each other. And in our differences, we discover the next thing that makes this whole being a kid and having parents and being a parent so difficult. And that is the fact that we are all imperfect. We are all imperfect. We are all flawed in our own ways. Kids, you are. Parents, you are. Dads, moms, we are all flawed, and we all had flawed parents. And these imperfections really, really get in the way of our relationships. And they really hurt us and mess us up. When I got in trouble, I was about 12, 13 years old. My dad came and he confronted me about something that I did at school. And he was giving me a lecture in the car. And he was, you know, pointing out my imperfection. And I just answered to him and I looked up to him and said, well, Dad, here's the truth. And I want you to know this and know it well. I never asked to come into this world in the first place. And I thought I was the most clever person in the world. And I thought I had just turned it on him. And I thought I was just a genius for coming up with that logic. And then he looked at me and said, well, I told my dad the same thing, yet here I am and here you are. So deal with it. And then I came to learn that almost every single kid at some point has told their parents that they didn't ask it. And I was so devastated when I learned that my creativity was not so creative. We all come to that point maybe where we used that argument with our parents. And we try to hide away from our imperfections with all this excuse. But the truth is that we are just imperfect. And that's the way we are. My dad was like that. And his dad was like that. And I am like that. And my kids were perfect until about 3 weeks old. And you know, once the problems couldn't be solved with a bottle of milk and a new diaper, then I came quickly to realize that they're too very imperfect, and we're all very, very imperfect. And because of those imperfections, our families many times suffer. And the worst thing is that many times those imperfections, we pass them down. So one day I come and, you know, I look at my little boy Christian and, you know, I'm head over heels with him. And he is, you know, a bright part of my life. And all of a sudden I see him and I say, shoot, he's acting just like me. Right? And those imperfections start causing all these things and all this problems. And then you see your kids and you come to realize that they're not perfect.
And even worst of all, maybe they might be more like you than you are. I was complaining about Christian at a church not too long ago, and this Sabbath school teacher came and talked to me. I wasn't here at RGF, so it wasn't any of you. You know, what you inherit, it's never stolen. She basically meant that whatever Christian did, he did get it from somewhere, and that somewhere was about me. But here's a really encouraging thing. Here's a really encouraging thing. As I go through the Bible, I start looking at all these parents in the Bible, all these dads in the Bible, and the only good dads that I found in the Bible were two-verse dads. You know who I'm talking about? The two-verse dads? No? You know where the two-verse dads are? Let me show you a few two-verse dads. 1 Kings 15 says, Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord that his father had done. That's all it says. Amaziah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord as his father had done. Hezekiah did right in the sight of the Lord as his father had done. Josiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord as his father had done. And those are the only parents in the Bible, dads in the Bible, that I hear that they've done good. Because all the other fathers in the Bible, the chapter fathers in the Bible, they all were very imperfect. You have Adam and Eve, their two first children. They had some issues. Imperfect kids. You have Noah, who was a full chapter dad, several chapters. Also very, very imperfect. You know the things he did. You had David, you know. He's not only a chapter, a several chapter dad. He was a several books of the Bible type of dad. And in those books, we find some very interesting stories. And the more we hear about dads, the more imperfect they come to see. And I find no perfect dad in the Bible. By the way, ladies, maybe this is why we didn't talk in Mother's Day. There's a lot more good moms in the Bible than good dads. So kudos to you guys. Maybe you guys have something that we're still trying to get. But No. We say that the Bible is all, you know, against women. And actually, that is one area where women are actually highly favored. We have a lot more good moms than good dads. But as we see all these imperfections, our natural instinct is always to change. We try to change ourselves. We try to change our circumstances. And if that fails, we just try to change the rules. So we have rules that are easier. And a lot of things have changed over time. And I'm sure your parents remind you of how things have changed, right? Many of you may have had that conversation with your mom or your dad. You know, when we were growing up, my dad always reminded me, we were five in a Fiat 500. And it wasn't like the Fiat 500 that has come into the U.S. that has grown and become Americanized. It was the Italian Fiat 500, which was the one that you see on TV, this little thing. And say, and look at you guys now. Now you have a Fiat Duna, which is just a five-door sedan, very small too. And now I have a Hyundai Odyssey, so I'll be able to tell my kids, you know, when we were growing up, we had a five-door sedan. Now you have a van. And my kid will probably tell his kids, well, when we were growing up, we have a van, and now you have this airplane, you know, that flies from tie to tie. And we always are reminded of how much things have changed. My dad used to tell me, well, when I was, you know, growing up in the table, we couldn't even speak. And you now get to speak and all these things. Or my dad used to tell me, you know, when I was growing up, I started working when I was 6 years old, and I started working when I was 11. And I hope Christian doesn't start working when he was 35, because that's kind of happening. But things are changing, and they're changing very fast. And sometimes we just try to change things because of all these imperfections and all these difficulties that we see. Things change around us too. You know, in the 1960s, 87% of households were built of two-parent homes. In 2009, that was down to 69%. Parents work full-time now more than ever before. 54% used to work full-time in 2009. That's even higher now, while only 32 in the 90s. And things are constantly changing. We're looking for specialized nannies. We want professor nannies now. That's a huge trend. But in all these things, in all this change, what can we do? Is it bad to change? In some areas, it's very good to change. I'm glad we change in some areas. But here's the thing. The further away we move from God's ideal for families, it is interesting that the people who suffer the most are always women and children.
the further we move away from what God intended for the family, often who suffer the most are women and children. So what does the Bible say about all this? And again, I'm going to err on being oversimplistic with the hope that we can actually do something so simple and that can make a difference. And in many areas of the Bible, we see God in some ways changing his attitudes toward people. And David Dildy, he's in Chicago right now, traveling back. He's very keen on this, how God's attitude towards people sometimes changes. And in the Bible, you know, you had in the beginning one man, one wife, and forever. And then guys decided to kill women if they didn't like them to get a new one. So I say, okay, you can have divorce now because of the hardness of their heart. And then he said, but he who even looks at a woman, and God adapts and always points to a higher standard. But when it comes to kids, it's actually very, very simple. So I invite you to follow with me if you want in Ephesians chapter 6. And this is pretty much all we're going to do today with the hope that it'll be so easy that we will actually try to do it. And it starts this way. By the way, nowhere in the Bible do we find advice for parenting, children, dads, moms, without first having advice for husbands and wives. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. If you want to try to do, you have to work on the other stuff too first. But let's just focus on the kids part. Chapter 6 of Ephesians, verse 1. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. So kids, first of all, obey mommy and daddy. I know the rules might be crazy, and I know all the other kids at school have cooler dads than mommy and daddy, but believe me, there's nothing better than you can do than obey mommy and daddy. And there's something that it says there that is actually quite interesting. It says that you may live long on this earth. And there might be a very good theological explanation deep, but let me go very simple. Kids, I'm being careful what word to use here because I don't want to offend everybody. But kids, when we're growing up, we're not very smart. Actually, we're kind of stupid sometimes. And we have these ideas. And you know, when we're kids, we think it's such a great idea to go into the cabinet and open up the kitchen cabinet and get that chlorine and just gulp it down like if it was pure water. And all these ideas, I'm sharing them because they were ideas that I had. And mom and dad had told me, no, don't do that. And because they wanted me to live long. And I thought it was always a great idea to steal my dad's car and go do donuts. And luckily, I got sent overseas where I couldn't do that anymore because I probably wouldn't have lived very long. Kids, obey your mom and dad because as imperfect as they are, nobody loves you as much as they do. And chances are that if you obey them, you might save yourself a lot of trouble and you might live a lot longer than if you don't. And some parents say, I'm going to kill you if you do that. So you might live longer definitely if you obey them, even though I'm sure that's not what they mean, okay? But obey your parents because nobody in this world loves you as much as they do. And as crazy as it may sound, obey them, yes, because it's the right thing to do, but obey them because, believe me, there's nobody that is watching out for you. And you might survive. And as imperfect as they are, obey them. And then it says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Do not provoke your children. I've always been intrigued by this verse. Hey, God, they're the ones provoking me into anger. What are you talking about? Well, how am I not going to provoke them when they're the ones provoking me into anger? But how many of us live much of our lives trying to resolve some sort of daddy issues or something like that? Parents, dads especially, the weight of your words has a tremendous impact on the lives of your child. Your kid, whether you see him a lot or you don't see them much at all, they will always seek your approval in almost everything that they do. Do not put such a heavy burden on them that it will follow them the rest of their lives. Pray daily for wisdom in raising them. But do not provoke them. Do not put more on them than what they can handle. Do not overburden them. Do not cause them to be frustrated. Do not cause them to have so many expectations that then they live their entire lives trying to seek for that which they didn't get. Do not cause them into anger. The rules, make them smart rules, not just overwhelming amount of rules. Don't have no rules either. That's not, we can talk about that maybe next week. But don't frustrate your children. And then lastly it says, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. How? Instruct them in the way of the Lord. Deuteronomy 6 said, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. You shall love him with all your heart." That's the greatest command. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Love the Lord your God. And then it says, and then you shall get this law and you will tell them to your children. You will talk to them to your children. You will pass them on to your children. And you will talk to them when you sit down at the table. And you will talk to them when you leave your house. And you will put them in your time to your heads and between your eyes and your foreheads and in the post of your house. And in everything that you do, show to your children God's mercy and God's love. And then maybe, just maybe, everything will be all right. Because here's the funny thing. All of us, me included, we have all missed the ideal. We have. We're not good parents, period. And if you're not a parent yet and you think you're going to be that parent, call me whenever you become a parent and tell me how you did it. And then we'll laugh together. Okay? And if you're a child and you don't have parents yet, hey, your parents are not perfect. Granted, I get it. You're right. You're right. But even though you might be doing this alone, or you might be on marriage 2 or 3 or 4, we all want for our kids the very best. And all those mistakes that we made, all those things that happened to us, we wish our kids wouldn't go through that. So how do we do that? You have to point them to something higher and something better. Franklin Roosevelt put it this way, and this guy saw a really rough patch of history. And he noticed that his kids were probably not going to have it very good and that the youth of America was going to have a very hard time during the period when he was alive. And he says, this is how he put it. We cannot always build a future for our youth. You cannot always provide for your kids everything you want. You cannot always protect them from all your imperfections. You may not always get everything the way you want them and everything that you want them. But we can build our youth for the future. You may not be able to give them everything. You will never be perfect. But you can give them something that will build them for the future. And that is why we need to show them something better. My cousin shared this with me, and it really moved me. And it's just a thought. That's all it is, just a thought. And it's not mine. I don't take credit for it. But I've been thinking about it a lot. 5, 10, 15, 30 years from now, some of you will have kids that today think that you're never going to have kids. Yeah, you'll have kids. Some of us will think we graduated from the whole kids thing. But especially those who have kids right now that are growing up. 5, 10, 15, 30 years from now, your kids may or might not remember that on the summer of 2017 you got in one of those cool spinner things and that they were going all wild over the spinner thing. And especially if they choke on it, then they'll really remember or something happens to it. Your kids may or may not remember all the Xbox Ones that you got them in PlayStation 4s and all the times they beat you at it because you had no idea. They may or may not remember that. They may or may not continue all those classes that you gave them, the piano, the judo, the karate, all these things. They may, do that the rest of their lives or maybe not. They may remember all the baseball games or softball games or basketball games that you went to watch or maybe not. They may pursue all the tennis classes that you pay them. They may go and pursue the tennis classes or not. But every decision that they make will still somehow be under your influence. Because 5, 10, 15, 30 years from now, when your kid is out there on his first year of college, his GPA or her GPA, yeah, that may determine what school she got to or he got to, what town she's in or she's not. But what she does that first Saturday night, or he does at 2 a.m., will have nothing to do with the GPA, with the piano classes, with the basketball games, with the softball games, and everything to do with their relationship with you and their relationship with God and how you nourish that. 15, 20, 30 years from now, when he or she is in her first business trip, after that big first fight with the wife, or after the kids, those are really rough months and years, I know. What happens after that meeting when he or she gets back to the hotel and walks by the bar, if they go in or not, and if they go in, how long they stay, and what happens after they go in or out, will have nothing to do with how many softball games you went to. It will have nothing to do with how many piano classes they went to. They will have nothing to do with all your screw-ups or all the things that you invested with them, but everything to do with your relationship with them and their relationship with God and their faith. When they bring their own kids into this world, they may remember, yeah, the school that they went to and how you helped them with homework and all these things, but the way they bring them up will have nothing to do with all the vacations that you took them or you didn't take them. It will have nothing to do with all the toys that you got them or didn't get them. And it will have everything to do with that relationship they experienced with you and that relationship they experienced with God because of you. And lastly, and I got a real kicker out of this one, you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, when they're getting ready to put you in the nursing home, they will probably not remember any of these things. And it will all be about that relationship that you have with them and that they have with their God, their Lord and Savior. Dads, you will never be perfect. I'm not perfect. Moms, you will never be perfect. Kids, mommy and daddy, hey, they're not perfect. I know. They're a pain in the neck. I know. They're so annoying and they're so burdensome and all these things. But if in spite of our imperfection, we get the relationship part right, somehow God can make the rest a way. You will never be perfect dad, perfect mom. But if you get this one thing right, only one thing, says, just instruct them in the way of the Lord. Because we have a good Father, he will fill in all the other batches and make it all right. Because Adam and Eve, those flawed and bad parents, God still gave them Seth, and humanity lived on. Noah, who got drunk and embarrassed himself, he still established humanity for a fresh start. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who all made the same mistakes throughout the ages, they still establish God's people. Samson and Manoah, that dad that seeked and went bad, they still saved Israel. And David, who was a really, really bad dad, you know, he made a lot of mistakes. You know what all those two-verse dads that we talked about point to? And it says, Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. And Messiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. Hezekiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father had done. Josiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, and following the ways of his father David, as he has done. You're going to be imperfect, no doubt about that. And that is why you need to show them something that is better than yourself. You're going to make mistakes, and you're going to fall short from the ideal, but that's why you need to show them an ideal to aim for. You will never reach it, and we never will, but if we point to it, at least we know that there is a good Father who will fill in all the blanks and all the mistakes and all the gaps. Because when you mess up in front of your kids and you come down and you kneel down, and I have to do this many times already and tell Christian, Daddy shouldn't have behaved this way.
that he messed up big time, and that is very sorry. But daddy prays to Jesus and he says, I'm sorry. And Jesus will help them to do better next time. Because if you point God to that ideal, God will fix your failures and permanently make them just fine. And then when your child fails, they too will know that they have a good, good father who can also make it right for them. You can get many things right. You can get many things wrong. But if you get one thing right, that one thing, that relationship with God, can make everything else okay. My grandpa, an Italian, terrible temper. I learned a lot of Italian bad words because of him. Not perfect. But he got one thing right. And that's why my dad is who he is. My dad, short-tempered, like a fuse, get angry all the time, absent father. First 5 years of my life, I saw him once every 2-3 months. But he got one thing right. That's why I'm here today. If we get one thing right, God can get all of our mistakes and make it all right. Now let's make a commitment today for our kids, for the next generation, to make this one thing right. Let's make that commitment as a church. As we sing Good, Good Father, I invite you to just stand wherever you are. And we'll finish with a word of prayer. But I want us in that prayer to make a commitment to get that one thing right that can make everything else okay.
You are perfect.
Some of you single daddies, two hats off to you. I don't know how you do it. Some of you maybe high school sweetheart. Some of you maybe going on your third try. Maybe the third is a try. I don't know. But we have a good, good Father. And He invites us to get that one thing right with Him so He can cover a multitude of imperfections. Get right the other ones, but we have to get that one thing right. Maybe you have kids today growing up. They're the biggest gift God has ever given you. And if you get that one thing right, doesn't matter how badly you screw up on everything else, God will make it okay. But you have to get that one thing right. Maybe you think you're done raising kids. Grandpas, grandmas, we need you more than ever. My generation, we're a little special. I know, we push all the boundaries. We're kind of lost. We need you. Believe me. If there was one generation that needed grandpa and grandma, it's this generation. So don't tune out. Please, knock some sense into us when you need to. You're not done. You're not finished. We love you, and we need you. Maybe you don't have kids right now. One day you will. And today you begin to nurture yourself to be ready for that day. Today, you're already determining who you're going to be. Maybe you'll never get to be a mommy and daddy. Maybe you wanted to or you didn't want to, but maybe you're dealing with mommy and daddies of your own. Maybe you're babysitting mommy and daddy. One of the funny things of life. It will be okay if we get this one thing right. So let's make a commitment today as a church to get the one thing right that can cover a multitude of imperfections. You want to stand and pray with me as we make this commitment? Let's make a commitment to get this one thing right for our kids, the kids of our church, for our parents, for whoever it is. Let's get this one thing right and pray that good Father of ours will cover
all the other imperfections, because he is perfect. And maybe he gave us those kids to simply show us how much we need him and how good he is. So let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, help us to celebrate you this weekend. Lord, as I stand here, I know that not a single one of us is perfect. I know that not a single one of us has gotten it right. And at the same time, especially those of us who have kids, I know we wish that our kids would do so much better than we did. And I wish if we could, we could, you know, make all the decisions for them that we made wrong so they don't have to suffer. But the truth is that even as hard as we try, because we are imperfect, we're never going to get it right. And if me and Cindy is all Christian and Eliana have to look up to, our kids are ruined. But if we can show them that there's something higher and better, something that we will never reach for now, but that it's there, they'll have the best fighting chance at being okay. And one day we will reach that perfection. If we aim for it, one day when you come in the clouds of heaven, we will reach that perfection. But help us to keep aiming at that ideal, even though if we know we're going to fail miserably, help us to keep aiming for it. And because you are a good, good Father, cover all the gaps that we leave behind, right all the wrongs, and drive us safely home. Lord, I know some of us don't have kids today or are done raising kids. Hey, thank you for the grandpas and the grandmas. May we learn from their wisdom. And may they help us to also be instructed in your ways, O Lord. Those of us having to deal with moms and dads, some of them dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia, we know it's hard, but help us to honor them. Maybe you've made their days long because they honor their mom and dad, and they loved us. And help us to love them in such a way. And I know that our lives are enriched by that. So give us the strength, the patience that we need. And help us to be more like you. And as we become more like you, may you cover our imperfection as you clothe us with your love and mercy. And as we leave this place today, yeah, maybe help us to aspire to be better parents, but perhaps we're not better. Better yet, help us to aspire to be more like you, that good, good Father. Help us to live here with the assurance that in spite of our imperfections, you still work. And if we turn our hearts to you, we will make everything else all right. Because that's the type of father you are. And that's the type of father and mother and child that we one day want to be. By your grace and your power. Thank you for all these things. In your Son's name, Jesus Christ, we pray. Thank you for coming. We'll see you again next week as we start BBS. 1 o'clock today, BBS training. God bless you. See you this week.
problem.
Love you too. I'll see ya. Yeah, exactly.
And then if it doesn't work, we're not ready.
Yeah, okay. We won't go back.
No problem.